Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Thaddeus Arroyo to the broadcast. Thaddeus is the Chief Executive Officer of AT&T Business, which serves over 2.5 million business customers in almost 200 countries and territories, including nearly all of the world's Fortune 1000 companies. As Chief Executive Officer, Thaddeus is responsible for AT&T's Integrated Business Solutions and International Organization. Thaddeus joined AT&T through its acquisition of Singular Wireless, where he was Chief Information Officer. Upon joining AT&T, he became Chief Information Officer of AT&T, a role that he held for 7 years. Thaddeus has since held a number of senior executive positions, including President of Technology Development, Chief Executive Officer of AT&T Mexico, and now CEO of AT&T Business. Prior to joining Singular Wireless, Thaddeus was a senior vice president at Sabre. Thaddeus holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Mathematics and Computer Science from the University of Texas at Arlington, as well as an MBA from Southern Methodist University. I recently caught up with Thaddeus in his office in Dallas, Texas, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Thaddeus discussed how his organization identifies emerging skill needs and creates opportunities for employees to develop those skills. Principle 2, infrastructure, as Thaddeus described the shifting role of IT from builders of technology and infrastructure to integrators, brokers, and managers of technology. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Thaddeus shared how the mindset of active problem solving rather than order taking can help CIOs develop a new type of relationship with the business. Principle 5, external partnerships, as Thaddeus discussed the ways in which AT&T's innovation centers partner with external organizations to create new solutions and experiences. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World Class IT is brought to you by TopTal, an exclusive network of the top freelance software developers, designers, and finance experts in the world. I recently caught up with TopTal CEO Tasso Duval, and he offered the following top five trends for hiring top talent.
The top five trends for hiring top talent are: 1, hiring talent remotely, ensuring that they are able to work remotely and that companies are hiring talent remotely. 2, leveraging teams in different dispersed locations. If you're hiring in-house and you're leveraging remotely a bit, being open to having talent even in the same time zone is an important factor that we've noticed. 3, highly skilled teams becoming the majority rather than the lead, meaning ensuring that the team composition comprises of predominantly high-skilled labor rather than high-skilled labor supported by lower-skilled labor. 4, infrastructure being created to support those teams, ensuring that the teams in-house are connected with the remote teams that are working together. And 5, flexibility with offer packages. We've seen that even the in-house talent that are joining companies from Google to Facebook and on are interested in demanding that there is a remote component to their job, whether it's 1 day a week or full time, be included within their offer packages.
Well, Thaddeus Arroyo, welcome to the Forum on World Class IT.
Thank you, Peter.
It's wonderful to speak with you. Thaddeus, I thought we'd begin with your current role at AT&T. You're the Chief Executive Officer of AT&T Business. Can you talk a bit about that business segment and your responsibilities?
Yeah, sure. And maybe as I do that, maybe talk a little bit about the many hats I've worn over the years and kind of that have evolved to this, and then conclude with what AT&T Business is all about and what we're doing. And because I've had a chance to move over the course of my career across multiple industries in multiple roles, serving businesses and enabling capabilities. But during most of my career, you know, I've been in the technology and telecommunications space. And as I mentioned, having an opportunity to work across multiple industries. And I've been appointed to positions along the way that have in the core areas here have always led to, you know, transformation, integration of technology, and in many ways in enabling business strategies that create business velocity and drive product innovation. And I've always looked, as I've looked at, you know, all the decisions over the course of my career, to to take on roles that put me in a position where I can broaden my skills through new experiences. And that is even all the way looking back from the beginning, which actually started in the IT department of Southwestern Bell. Think of that as the nucleus of what is AT&T today. And actually started my career in the building across the street from where my office is today. And while I was working there, I also served in the U.S. Army Reserve as a Signal Corps officer. And it was interesting because that part-time experience is, I think, a large element of my core in terms of how I develop my management and my leadership foundation. But after beginning my career in what was the telecommunications space, I left. I actually changed industries, went to work for what was the IT department of American Airlines. I was Sabre Corporation. And had an opportunity there to work first in the area of expanding their international data networks, moved into applications development, and finally into product marketing just before I left. And my time with Sabre was really instrumental if I look at position to do what I do today. And that allowed me to move across many disciplines and get some really good experience around not just technology and the application of technology, but around operating the businesses. And that's really what led to my first CIO role, which was at Singular Wireless. And if you look back at that time frame, Singular Wireless was what were regional wireless players that were put together when, at that time, Bell South and SBC. SBC is what had evolved from what was Southwestern Bell Telephone. And when they put all their wireless assets together, they created Singular Wireless, and I was the first CIO at Singular Wireless. And I had an opportunity as we brought those companies together, think of this as local players, to create what was going to become a national wireless play, to direct the scaling of our operations, integration of our systems during a period of time when the wireless industry was consolidating. And then in the midst of that, Singular purchased AT&T Wireless, and that's when we became AT&T Wireless. And then at the beginning of 2007, AT&T actually acquired Bell South, and so I had an opportunity to take the role as the global CIO for all of AT&T. So that's what brought me into at least the company that I'm operating in today. And then, moving forward a little bit there, in January of 2015, AT&T bought one of the wireless operators in Mexico, and that's when I had the opportunity to make a pivot into the CEO role, and I was appointed as the chief executive officer for AT&T in Mexico. And soon after we acquired our first company, we acquired the second wireless operator. So what that did together is it gave us the third and fourth largest wireless operators in Mexico, where we set out with an intent to bring greater competition to the Mexico wireless market by integrating the two companies that we purchased and bringing in the next generation mobile internet, our 4G LTE network, to customers across Mexico. And for me, that was not only a great pivot to both, driving every aspect of the business, but it was an exciting time to be leading this transformation during such a historical moment for the telecommunications industry in Mexico. We invested in Mexico on the heels of telecommunications reform, and we moved into a market that was poised to begin shifting. It was highly concentrated. And in like many other non-traditional moves in my career, it really helped me grow personally and professionally, which all of that builds up to, I think, ultimately is what led to what I'm doing today. And that was in December of last year, December of 2016, I was appointed as the CEO at AT&T Business, and my organization serves 3.5 million business customers in almost 200 countries and territories. We're an organization that I believe is in a unique position to help business customers around the world transform by tapping into the power of everything that's around them, whether that's a smartphone, a car, a traffic light, or even a mobile workforce. And we bring the solutions and capabilities that allow that to happen. We connect businesses to the world, but we do much more than that today. At AT&T Business, we fuel business transformation by taking those capabilities and establish our network and the solutions that we bring as this trusted platform that lets businesses, small, medium, and large, tap into this new and emerging digital ecosystem. And in the years ahead, you know, the businesses that we serve, they're going to experience some dramatic changes in the technology that they consume. The capabilities that these technologies deliver make businesses more efficient. I think that part's obvious. But I think we're moving into an era where they become essentially in the critical path to how products and services for those businesses evolve. And so if I look at all of the many hats that I've worn as I've moved from CIO to the role of a CEO in a technology company, you know, it's interesting now to be on the other side of the table, delivering solutions to help CIOs innovate and transform.
Very interesting. Thank you for that overview. And I'm curious, how does the, as I understand it, I don't believe there's a corporate CIO anymore. The post you once had no longer exists. And so there are now CIOs in each of the businesses. Is that correct, Thaddeus?
Yeah, the evolution was, you know, as we began a journey with the shift of our network from a set of hardware appliances to software, we created a new function within our technology organization, and that was the leader of all technology development, which had incorporated the traditional CIO role, but also the support for our network, which really is becoming software that's running right on virtualized hardware. And when we did that, we transitioned the role of the CIO to support the respective lines of business versus having a single CIO. And we also essentially integrated our organizations in that, you know, the CIO journey that we were on was to move all of our applications, you know, into an environment that was largely virtualized, based on software and positioned to operate across our infrastructure in a manner not unlike we would, you know, deploy our workloads in the cloud. And as we began moving our network, we brought both of those organizations together and created this common development organization to support both sets of needs. And so now our CIOs focus on supporting the businesses, driving innovation deep into the business, and then tapping into a set of common capabilities that our technology development team develops for them.
One of the things I find so interesting about your career path is the extent to which you've been able to get both depth of experience, but also breadth of experience, which no doubt serves you well. And I'm curious, to what extent is that sort of the modus operandi of AT&T, generally speaking, of finding opportunities for people in adjacent areas as their career grows?
No, absolutely. And I think it's, frankly, it probably speaks to, you know, any modern career in a world where we're seeing so much disruption. And so if I look at that and reflect on, you know, my experience as a CIO and helping me in the roles that I've served in as I've moved to become a CEO, you know, I feel I was very fortunate that through multiple technology and business leadership roles across AT&T, particularly early in my career, it put me in a position to really get exposed to growth-oriented, innovative, and transformative set of opportunities because of the evolution that we've been driving, as we manage into what are ever-increasing technology cycles. The duration is decreasing, right, while the cycle and the complexity increases. And these experiences equip me with a broad perspective across many technology and business operation disciplines that really took me in the right direction in terms of the skills that I think are required for any successful business leader. And through my lens, and, you know, I think AT&T is a great example of that in terms of the constant pivot that we need, the constant transformation of all the skills. We look very deeply at all of our teams, whether you're in an organization that serves businesses or whether you're part of our core technology team, and defining what are those skills that we're going to need for the future. And we create the pathways to develop those skills as well as the opportunity to go step into those roles. And then I look at this through my lens. The role, of the CIO has been pivoting for some time. And I think that you could apply that to almost any position. But if I look specifically, you know, at CIOs, they can't just be integrators or enablers. You know, they have to become transformation leaders. So I think that's an important theme through this. And I think it's those roles. And if I look across AT&T, and I could apply this to even, you know, through the time I spent at Sabre, It's developing that sense of potential to use innovation as this disruptive tool for the businesses that we all support. And now as a CEO, it's about having that opportunity to apply that perspective across a broader set of areas. All that really drives this need for experience and the need for the commitment to develop those skills along the way that allows us then to apply it, you know, in an environment where we are all driving towards here, and that's this evolution of the digital world around us, how we engage our customers in digital ways, how we support and engage our employees, and ultimately, you know, how we use all of these emerging capabilities to drive transformative rather than linear experiences.
Interesting. I also wanted to, I know from our past conversation that you've mentioned that you believe that those CIOs who take the bull by the horns in the digital evolution and transformation of many businesses are going to be particularly well suited to follow a path like the one that you have. And I wonder if you could take a moment just to describe the rationale.
Sure, sure. And I think that, you know, as I look at this, it's, and because I think the thread in terms of defining that path is much how you approach the role. And so when it comes to, you know, the specific skills, you know, and particularly in serving, you know, as a chief information officer of any business, regardless of your industry, it's taking the time to develop that business acumen becomes critical, not for your future role as much as for success in your current role, because the lines between technology and business continue to blur. You know, today's CIO has to have a clear understanding of every aspect of business and the marketplace that their firm operates in. And, you know, there's great opportunity for CIOs to then use their unique visibility across all business units, then to now contribute and actually help drive the business strategy. But I think that there's a new level of operation that CIOs have to bring with this, and that's operating with a level of transparency and an ability to actively engage in problem solving, not just order taking, to establish and maintain trust with their peers and peers across the business. It's that critical business enablement and engagement. And I think to do this, CIOs have to engage now, you know, using their language in at least translate into business context rather than technology jargon. Everything has to be evolved into being able to communicate at the business concept level. That drives tremendous growth, but it's the power of how we drive innovation. And those leaders who become adept at doing this and doing this quickly in terms of, you know, driving innovation and iteratively enhancing for the maximum impact are the ones that I think are going to realize the greatest success, you know, in the years to come. And ultimately, you know, as I look, you know, and I've looked at this, you know, over the course of my career as a CIO, and I do today, as I look for CIOs that I support or that serve me. And I look at the successful CIO of the future as those who, you know, are adept at helping their business partners think differently about their products and services. They help their business partners think differently about how they operate their business, and they do all of this through the lens of the customer, and how does this impact the customer experience? Whether your customer is a consumer or your customer is a peer business that you're engaging with, and that is really what really leads to those, I think, truly disruptive opportunities.
And I know, Thaddeus, that you continue to spend a lot of time with customer CIOs outside of the organization and gather them together and have a variety of meetings with customers who are CIOs. And mm-hmm. I wonder, you know, as you've had a chance to do so, as a partner of theirs, but also as a former practitioner of the role, have you seen a greater number of CIOs seizing the opportunity you've just described?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, more and more, I'm seeing what I believe to be an evolution that would take place when asked the same question 20 years ago, come into a reality, and that is the CIO looking much more at their organization, you know, as a broker of technology rather than a builder. And don't get me wrong, I think there's critically important roles in what we integrate and what we build as we deliver technology. But we really pivot now to brokering and managing the risk associated with it. And what that really means is that we are able to tap into technology and bring it to use in the form of real practical innovation much quicker when we're simply bringing it to bear, integrating it, putting the right risk management program around it such that we can also deliver the security that we need. But the focus is then on that rapid innovation. And so as I spend time with CIOs, I look at this current generation that I engage with, it's almost becoming now the no longer the exception, but the rule that the approach to driving this is oriented around not only the speed to market, but tapping into the maximum amount of potential and driving that journey much more so than necessarily focusing on just the build part of that infrastructure. I think it's a large evolution. If I look back at the past of what I and the CIO might have been the chief infrastructure officer to where I see today, the rule is really becoming that the CIO is now the chief information officer in reality. So I'm seeing a large evolution in this, and I think a lot of this is a function of the capabilities that we can all tap into.
Mm. I know you've also established innovation labs in a variety of cities, including a particularly large one in Dallas, where you are based. Can you talk a bit about the rationale in so doing, and maybe a little bit of the fruit of the labor of those innovation labs?
No, absolutely. And as we look at that, we have what we call as our Foundry Innovation Centers all over the world, and we found those to really move into a development model that allows us to innovate like a startup, but with startups. And if the approach is one of putting practical problems, into an organization that has disparate skills that can go and tackle the problem in a new way, but incorporate and even bring in new ideas and new capabilities from what would be even smaller startup entities to drive innovation at a new speed. Some real examples of that really would relate to, if I look at my Internet of Things organization and the types of products and services that we've brought to market. And many of those have become with simply bringing a customer into one of our Foundry Innovation Centers. We have an IoT Foundry in Plano, Texas, and we simply start with ideating around the art of the possible to transform. Rather than starting with how do you simply mobilize how something works today, what could you do? What would you do if you really were no longer required to be tethered to any physical infrastructure? And items that have come out of that, and we have a number of large-scale deployments underway already, but have been connected containers, and we're working with shipping companies now all over the world where we've developed right out of our IoT Foundry the ability to not only track containers, but to use the motion from those containers to generate electricity to actually, power the modems that connect those containers and develop along those lines the use cases that allow us now to keep applying this to new areas. Another interesting area, because we're deploying thousands of these units now, is the connected cooler. There are certain products that do better when they're served at the correct temperature. And we work with companies who want to ensure that their product in the retail locations that could be anywhere around the globe are censored in such that the temperature, inventory levels by putting a simple IoT sensor inside of a cooler. And from that, we've created a connected cooler set of capabilities that we can take across multiple industry verticals. And obviously, we've done tremendous amount of work with the connected car, and building new applications, not just for the ability for car manufacturers to support certain services for their customers, but now to take the entire connected experience to customers, allowing them to make their car a hotspot and make their car the newest smartphone on wheels. And there's these types of capabilities that continue to emerge, and they all focus around through the lens of bringing a customer in, applying some technologies that we can support, and how can we innovate around and create new experiences that can change your business or even create products that you want to offer in the marketplace.
Great examples all across those. I appreciate them. Well, Thaddeus Arroyo, thank you for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Great. Good talking to you, Peter.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Linda Jojo, Executive Vice President of Technology and Chief Digital Officer of United Airlines. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.